From retro myths to modern day masterpieces, we'll be breaking down the universe's most pondered gaming questions. Join us as we journey through our childhood memories. We'll be diving into what it meant to us, growing up through the dawn of the internet. The Cake is a Lie podcast with your hosts, Gareth and Jamie.
Welcome back to the Cake is a Lie podcast with your hosts, Gareth and Jamie. Now, today we're discussing RTS games and why we play and love them. Now, briefly, last week we spoke on RTS games. So, as you're aware, Gareth and I had taken a wee break from the podcast, even though we were touching base every weekend, still playing some games, and we decided to dive into various RTS games. So, Gareth, on that, good morning and how are you?
Good morning. Very well. I'm excited for this one. We're covering RTS and we're doing a top five for the first time in a while, which is exciting because I always love hearing your top five because we have like very different backgrounds. So when we go back to like the earlier stuff, I have no idea what you're going to pick. And then I know what you like in the new age, but I don't know. Like I know which modern ones would be on your list, but I don't know if you have like five old ones that override those new ones, you know? So it's quite exciting.
I definitely have. Yeah, like I definitely have an older one. Like my top pick, for example, would be, I think it's tied with a lot of sentiment. I'm not telling you now, but I'm just giving you a little a flavor saver. So it's quite a sentimental game to me. So it's just something I have mentioned in the past before, but it's something I always kind of, I suppose, hold in my heart a little bit because it's sentimental. So
yeah,
that said,
I know what you mean. All right, so let's kick it off first by saying what is an RTS, right? So it's for anyone who doesn't know, it's not just a strategy game, but it's a real-time strategy game, which means that the action must be happening and not be turn-based. So like the game Risk is not an RTS game because that's turn-based, but the game of, let's say, Age of Empires, the most common one, is a real-time strategy game because you have to react in real-time to the strategy, basically. So why is an RTS game so fun for you? What's the draw?
I think even like because we've kind of dove back into playing them, like I remember when you kind of said you were playing, I believe was it a Halo Wars 2 and you tried a few online games with random kind of skirmish. It's an extremely difficult way to enjoy the game unless you're very good at it. But It's quite a frustrating way to play because people don't let you establish a base or a footing. They're just constantly bombarding you and they basically whittle you down. And I think there's a frustration aspect with that. But I love playing with friends RTS games because you can kind of set the ground rules and say, look, we're going to build for 20 minutes or a half an hour and then launch an attack or a sneaky attack here and there. But
for me, this is kind of similar to like when you were a kid and you would set up your action figures and stuff, you know? And like, I know me and my friend used to do it with like Pokemon and stuff like this, where we'd spend ages setting them up for like a battle. And the battle would never really happen, you know, we'd just be like setting them up for ages and be like, oh, this is how I want them and I want these here. And I think with the RTS game, it's kind of like that, but you get to actually follow through and have the battle then, you know. We can set this rule of like, okay, for 30 minutes, we're going to build. And then after 30 minutes, anything goes basically. And I know what you're saying, but like the online play, you join in and basically you're like, oh, I want to build up my base. And then within like 3 minutes, they're storming the base with this tactic that wins every match kind of thing, you know. It's like playing a grandmaster in chess, you know, you're not going to have much fun. But yeah. Do you enjoy the resource management or do you prefer just the building aspect? So do you prefer
when it's just resource.
You? Yeah. So you like the management and starting with nothing kind of?
Yeah. Like I think if you kind of, I suppose, intimately know the game, you kind of know the process that you're going to, like the structure, the route you're going to take. So you know you need to build X, Y, and Z to get to B. That's not how you say the alphabet. But yeah, you need to build A, B, and C to get to Z. But like the resource management, I think I like that. I like there's certain games that I'm going to mention as well. I just think like they're so far ahead of its time, just animation-wise. You know, you can see, like in one game in particular, you can see your workers going off and they're actively mining the resource. They're bringing it, you know, by wheelbarrow back to the smelter. You can see it being smelted down into actual kind of ingots. And those little kind of touches I enjoyed. Or you see them chopping down trees, or you see the whole building aspect where like the build animations, it's not like putting up a white tent and then suddenly the building is revealed. It's kind of nice to see little elements kind of being put together. That kind of thing I like.
With a lot of the newer games, they lost that. Like we mentioned Halo Wars, and in Halo Wars, like when you go to get the resources, it's just like someone shows up at the resource and they're just like doing nothing basically, and there's just a plus sign for your resource going up.
Yeah.
And there's no animation. Lazy. And then when a building comes in as well, it's like there's a little bit of a landing pad starts and then the structure just gets dropped in from space basically. Yeah. And it's kind of like if you go back to Age of Empires and stuff like this, you see them chiseling away at the gold and then the gold is getting smaller and smaller. You see them put down like the foundations, then you have like the four or five stages of the building before it's finished, And that kind of stuff is really like quite ahead of its time, I think.
Yeah, I think it's quite immersive, It's just like you're not, like you said, you're just like going over, standing by a resource and just slowly absorbing it, I suppose.
Yeah. There's also like what I really enjoy is the upgrading and unlocking and getting, better and better and more advanced machinery, because that's the key with like most games where you're unlocking things. So if you take Ratchet and Clank or you take Call of Duty, you're unlocking the weapons, you're getting stronger and stronger. But I think with RTS games, you have that whole process during every game because you're starting with nothing and then you're building up and up and up.
Yeah, I get that.
So it's kind of cool. I like that aspect. So tell me, go ahead.
No, it was just on that. It was just like, when you're trying to, as you're trying to develop your, I suppose, what would you call it? Your kind of tiers, tier one, two, and three, like to advance your build menu.
Your ages or your eras or depending on the game, what they're called, basically.
Your technology level, I suppose. And then you're trying to get to the end of it before you end up getting attacked so you can actually build the good stuff, which is a time management as well.
But I do love the base building aspect, particularly in stuff like, I think in Halo Wars, it's not that dynamic because you just have like a set structure in Halo Wars. So you have a base and you build like six things around it and that's it. But I think in other games like Command and Conquer and Age of Empires, the whole like organizing your base to defend against attacks and stuff is quite cool, And I like that you can take, when you're playing with someone as well, you can take on certain roles. So you can say, okay, I'm going to defend and you have to try and invade me.
Yeah.
Which is quite cool.
Set the ground rules.
Yeah. And then like one person is putting all their resources into attacking while the other is putting everything into defending, and they're very different builds at the end. And it makes them both kind of super strong in their own aspect because you're not building defense and attack at the same time, which is quite cool. But yeah. But tell me, do you have honorable mentions?
I have two, but there's actually three. Now, one is an RTS game. Now, I know we're kind of establishing like an RTS is real-time strategy. These two would be just strategy games, so they are turn-based. But I think one game in particular, it's like no other game at least I haven't seen any kind of modern version of it. So I'll just say the year it was released. So this is back in 2008. Are we doing honorable mentions now? Or are we doing it at the end?
I don't know what you want to do. I'm easy.
I'll just say this one and I can save the other two then for the end. So this game was End War. It was a Tom Clancy game.
Yes, I know it. I never played it but I was under the impression this was a shooter. No?
No, it's like a top down. It's kind of like Rome Total War, as in like you're kind of on the battlefield. The only reason why I mentioned it, because no other game I've seen that does, you can do voice commands, so you can actually control your forces with your voice. So like you can, I can't even remember the voice commands, but I can just distinctly remember it. So you can kind of say unit two, attack or defend or patrol or call in airstrikes. And it was just a real kind of, and even like if you're looking at the, I'll get the trailer, I'll link in the trailer actually. The trailer for it's phenomenal. I still remember. It's kind of like Iron Man esque. Do you know where you got the kind of the in Iron Man film when he's doing kind of the extrusion of the Iron Man glove, and it's, what would you call it, like virtual reality? You know, it's kind of, he sticks his hand in.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. Exactly. Yeah. So there's just kind of an augmented kind of element to it. So no, that was just one. I just kind of thought, like, you know, when you're kind of thinking up a list, it just sprang into my mind. It was just like, man, I just remember playing that, and I remember it being a good bit of fun.
Yeah.
Now I can't even remember, was it only single player, or I can't remember, was it actually multiplayer? I must look it up actually.
Just for the
voice element, it was really good.
That was on the PS3 and Xbox 360 as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure if it was
on PlayStation.
I think it was on PlayStation 3.
Probably was.
The only game I can think of which is kind of similar is, not similar, but in the voice command aspect, is SOCOM US Navy SEALs, or SOCOM.
That was another one in my head, SOCOM. Yeah,
because that had the voice commands as well, where you could Bravo, move to, defend.
When we logged on this morning, that's what I was looking up. Yeah.
Really? Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
I was like, God, what other game has done it? There's very few, really, you know.
Yeah, but SOCOM was, in a sense, kind of somewhere between a shooter and a kind of a real-time strategy game. It's not like, you know, a top-down overview strategy, but you're controlling three other units and you have to, you know, coordinate them in real time.
Position them.
You know? And it's not a game where you can just run off on your own and complete everything, you know, because some of them are stealth missions where you've got to line people up at different points and then take out people at the same time and so on. So yeah, that's pretty cool. I'll do one of my honorable mentions just because we already kind of talked about it, and that was Halo Wars 1 and 2. What's interesting about this, it's a little bit different for a few reasons, I think. The first one is it's very much designed for a console. So like, it's designed with the controller in mind. And I think the mouse support only came later when it was on Xbox Game Pass on PC. And because of this, it's a very different game. And we often complain about the limitations of it, like that you can only have, you know, 100 or so units. The base building is quite limited. But I think it's made with the controller in mind, that everything is easy to select, you know?
Yeah,
I think controlling just massive legions of things.
Like, I actually like Halo Wars. I like Halo Wars 2 in particular. I just think, like, I think it's quite diverse. Like, you actually feel like when you're playing a different faction that you're getting an entirely different kind of toolkit.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoy. The only my frustrating thing with that is that you just can't zoom out far enough. Because there's a lot of times where you have all your units kind of clustered and you're trying to grab them all. Now, I know you can actually do a select all, but it's still just when you're trying to encumbrance them, I find that
I think, again, this comes down to it's a console first game. So if you do have that massive zoom out, you lose the accuracy with the analog then, basically, you know?
Maybe,
so I think every problem we have with it kind of ties into it being a console first game. Like, but the zoom is very limited. It's very limited. Like, it's quite narrow. Like, to the point where if there's a battle going on, you can't see the whole battle at some points.
Yeah, I get it, yeah.
But it does also, it falls into one of the tropes which is like what many, many games fall into, and that's every game has like a super unit at the end. Mm. And in Halo, there's like, it's kind of like a Pelican, it's the Condor. So it's like the big ship in Halo, basically.
I've experienced it.
You've experienced it. And then on the side of the what are the bad guys called in Halo again? The Covenant.
The Covenant.
Yeah. Jesus. on the side of the Covenant, you have the Scarab, which is like the massive walking beetle. And it's basically just whoever can first get to that unit is gonna win, basically. It's like it's a total overpowered thing, you know.
And just to touch, when Garrett and I first started back playing Halo Wars 2, like, I kind of probably played it more recently. Did you play it at all, actually, before then?
No, that was my first time jumping in when we played.
Yeah, so I'd played it previously and kind of always done the Covenant.
I remember specifically when we were playing it, I was like, Jamie, how do you make this unit? And you were like, I don't know. And you were like completely silent. And then Jamie would walk into the base with 10 of those units.
Well, two.
I was like, you dick. And then you're like, sorry, didn't hear you.
But like, I was still trying to remember. But I mean, like, yeah. So I think our first like two matches, I think I kind of trounced you. And then
completely, yeah.
Garrett decided to go beast mode. And
well, I went to work the next day then. You were offline. I was like, fuck this prick now.
So yeah, Garrett built the Condor, whatever it's called. Condor?
Yeah, the Condor. Yeah. It's kind of like the Pelican.
Its range is phenomenal, so you can't even get close to it to damage it.
And I think it's also like you have the you get into kind of a stalemate because you have the Scarab, right? And the Scarab is very slow moving. And the Condor is much quicker moving and can just fly in a straight line, basically. And it can stay out of range of the Scarab, right? So it can essentially just take out the Scarab without ever getting near it. And the Scarab can't fire back or anything. But then you can build the Scarab so fast that you can have another Scarab before I even get to your base.
You can nearly always have VI.
It's like this endless loop where you always have a backup Scarab, you know? Whereas if I lose the Condor, I can't build two quick enough to have two of them,
and
you know?
The only thing I actually, the only reason why I won one of those matches was because I was killing your healing drones. So it eventually whittled you down.
Yes. That's it. But no, yeah, that was my honorable mention anyway. But let's go into number five. Give me your fifth.
My fifth is Halo Wars 2.
Okay. Let's continue to talk about it. Fuck's sake.
And I think the reason why I liked it so much, because obviously being a huge fan of like the Halo franchise and Halo, you know, like it being like probably the first game I ever played on the original Xbox.
Really?
And just seeing, yeah, it would have been, yeah. It was the whole, actually it wasn't the first game I played on the Xbox. First game I played on the Xbox was Splinter Cell. That's the reason why I bought it.
But was Halo Wars the original, on Xbox One?
No, Xbox. I'm saying Halo 1 was on Xbox.
Ah, sorry. I thought you said Halo Wars. I was like, I thought it was the 360.
Halo 1 was on the OG Xbox. And yeah. I'd say I got that probably like a couple of games after, like as soon as I got that console, first game I was playing was Splinter Cell. Mm-hmm. And then I think I got borrowed Halo off a friend. And then eventually got it. But like, obviously have played most of them. I actually haven't played the newest Halo or Halo Infinite. And Halo, is it 4? I haven't played. I think I've played all the others. Mm-hmm. They're just something I kind of started playing co-op with people. And just over time, I was actually playing Infinite with my niece. But we haven't kind of touched back with it. And I think, you know, when you're start playing these games and you kind of get some progress, you kind of feel guilty if you're to go back and play it. You know, you're kind of saving it.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah. When you're playing it,
I'll keep it for them. But yeah, Halo Wars, the reason why I kind of liked it, even like in the first one as well, like you'd have the battle tanks, the tanks that you use play in Halo? So you'd have the Wraith, mm-hmm. and you'd have, I can't remember what the Marines tank was. You'd see those, or just the tank. Yeah, the tank.
I know the one you mean, though. Yeah.
It's a cool kind of aspect when you're playing Halo Wars and you can see all the elements from the games, everything, all the history.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of cool.
And so controlling them kind of all at once is pretty cool as well, to have that franchise.
Yeah. And like when you're kind of playing, I suppose, like, I remember, was it in Halo 2? Was it Halo 2 you were playing as the Arbiter?
This was the split campaign where it was back and forth between Master Chief and the
Army. Yeah, so for the first time you got to play as an elite Covenant. And it was just kind of like that's something that always I always gravitate to the baddies side.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The same when you're playing Halo Wars, like I just always kind of went for Covenant.
You even behave like them when we're playing. But no, that was very cool because like in Halo, when you played Halo 1, you know, you were the good guys. And every game before that, you were the good guys fighting the bad guys, and that was it. And then in Halo 2, I mean, there was probably other games did this before, but I don't remember them. And in Halo 2, then you play as the bad guy all of a sudden. And that was really like, Jesus, I'm the bad guy, you know?
And you're seeing it from the other side. Like,
yeah. And it was just, it felt almost like you were playing a mod or something, you know?
Yeah. Like the Arbiter campaign was probably like a standout moment in, for me anyway, playing the Halo franchise. And it was just the cinematics for it were just phenomenal. And you're kind of, you know, finding out as you go that like the Oracles are they called the Oracles? They're corrupt and kind of giving misinformation. So it's really
humanizes the enemy as well, that they have like their own politics and their own kind of
corruption,
their own scandals going on and stuff like
their own politicians.
Yeah. Because in Halo 1, you just think, oh, they're the bad guys and they're all trying to invade us and the drama is just on our side, you know? And then you play as the Arbiter and you see that he's like the traitor and all this kind of stuff. And it's kind of eye-opening, let's say, from the enemy point of view. But I will do another honorable mention because I think I need to do this honorable mention before my fifth one, right? Because we're inevitably going to talk about the two anyway. And my next honorable mention is Command & Conquer Red Alert.
Ooh, I'm surprised, actually. I thought that would be in the list.
No. That's no. So this one, I remember, it wasn't like the first strategy game I played, right? So that would have been, I think, like Age of Empires on a friend's PC or something like this. But it was the first one that I can remember owning, I think. And it was when...
I think I owned this.
It gets very blurry around when I had the PS1 and what I was playing on PC because it's kind of hard to tell what year was what, kind of. That makes sense. Mm. But I think definitely the other ones were later on PC. But it was basically I had gotten a PS1 from my uncle. I think I told this story before. I got a free PS1 from my uncle. And it was our first console since the Sega Mega Drive. So I had this PS1 and it was gifted to me as well. So it was in my bedroom and everything, which was the first time it wasn't like a family console. And I had like NDK, which we covered a lot, and Formula One and stuff like this. I got like a big binder with loads of games, basically. And then I went and rented a game and I rented Command & Conquer Red Alert, right? Command & Conquer 3 Red Alert. And I remember I didn't have a memory card and I was trying to like beat it before I brought it back, basically. I didn't manage it, but I had it for like 2 nights. The console was left on all night, basically. And I was just like, I think I put like a jumper over it to like hide the light and the fact that it was on, which was probably dangerous. And the disc just melting away.
Tucking in your PlayStation.
I did convince my father that we would keep it an extra night. So, you know, you would rent it for like the 2 nights. And then you could keep it an extra night, but when you went back, you would have to pay the fine, which was basically just the charge for having it an extra night. So we paid the extra night, and I didn't manage to finish it, but it was on from like literally Friday until Monday morning. The PS1 was on, and I was playing it right up until just before school, and then I had to eventually turn it off and bring it back. But that was phenomenal. That was like my first time playing one that I really got into the campaign, I think. So yeah. It's probably on your list.
It is, actually, yeah.
We can touch on
You seem to be calling. I know you're screwing my list. Because we're talking about it, rather than saying another game and then coming back into it, we'll stay on topic. So Command & Conquer, even though definitely the first kind of two would be in order. So we'll just call Command & Conquer my fourth pick. Command & Conquer, like I just remember like the real-time cinematics. So they actually had like proper actors acting out. Yeah, this is the scene.
And the voice of Sam Fisher was in Red Alert, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
Michael Ironside. The real actor in the cutscenes was in it. The fellow who voices Sam Fisher in Splinter Cell, which was pretty cool.
And what was the guy's name? He was in Home Alone. He was the guy in the Home Alone 2 inside in the hotel. But he's in it a lot.
Yes, he's the. Yeah. He's the clerk, basically, in the hotel. Yeah.
It's just mad to see them. So Command & Conquer, I think, like, throughout, like, because I've played the bulk of them. I can remember, actually, Renegade was their first kind of, it was actually, like, a first-person Command & Conquer, which I had bought it. Yeah, look it up. I bought it, and I couldn't run it on the PC.
I could be totally misremembering this now, but I think I looked this up for another episode, and I think Command & Conquer Renegade was supposed to be a completely different game, and they didn't know how to market it, so they rebranded it as Command & Conquer, basically.
Command & Conquer.
Yeah, and that's why it's like a completely different like genre game, just with Command & Conquer slapped on.
Just thrown in. The first person just thrown in. Yeah. Command & Conquer for me, I think like kind of the biggest standout games for me are my favorite would have been Red Alert 2. And I just loved the soundtrack for it, the music. I still listen to that music today. You had Tesla cannons and Tesla coils from kind of the Russian side, which is class. Yeah. The Iron Curtain. Or Tiberian Sun, or Tiberian Wars was probably the best of the franchise.
I would have played, to be honest, I don't remember if this first one I rented was like Command & Conquer or 1, 2, 3 or Red Alert. I remember Command & Conquer Red Alert the most from my childhood, so I assume it was that one maybe, and I just passed by the first few, but I'm not 100%.
I'm not sure if you have the Tiberian
I have the remastered
Sun or Tiberian
collection.
Wars.
But yeah. Not Tiberian Wars, I don't think.
If Tiberian Sun's on it, there's one anyway. You've got, I think the alien race is called a Skryn. But like, it's probably like the coolest. Like, we might try and dip in and play a game of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And get you to play as them. It's probably like the coolest faction. Like, it's just nuts. Like, the technology, you're like your proper alien. You get a mothership, which moves super slowly, but it one-shots everything. It one-bangs buildings, charges up and... Yeah, it's pretty cool, and you can portal your forces across the map as well. Like, so, it's cool.
We did play a recent game of that Command & Conquer, and you were doing your usual prickish thing. we set up.
Tell me how you really feel.
There was a lake in the middle of the map, and I basically built like a whole another base in like the top right corner.
Yeah, it was pretty sneaky.
Put all my subs in the lake and stuff, and then you were like, we were doing our thing of like, we'll build at the start and we won't attack and stuff, and then you all of a sudden just went, will we go for it, Soya? And you didn't know, I had like this weapon that lets you see the whole map and see what everyone's units are doing, and I had it active, and you were like, I was like, why is Jamie moving all his units right down to my base? And then you were just like, will we go for it, Soya? Okay. And I was like, yeah, we can. And you were already waltzing into the base, having everything set up. I was like, you prick. And you were like, what? I just sent him in.
They're already there. They're on the board.
Jamie, when he plays strategy games, his whole morals just go out the window. It's just win-win.
A little bit competitive. Oh, no, yeah, but you were very sneaky.
You
so
got
like Garrett decided to...
As well.
Like Garrett set up his main construction base, built a few power plants and a few bits and bobs, barracks, training some units, then packed up his construction base and moved it to another corner of the map and then set up everything there. So while I was kind of distracted blowing up, he'd already moved all his units in. So it was a very, very sneaky, like Trojan horse kind of.
I also set up in like the other corner was like an airfield base with loads of helicopters that were basically flying up to bomb you. Going back to refuel, flying up to bomb you. You had no idea where they were coming from. No,
that was very funny. Sticky. That was very
But I made all this plan because I could see the whole time what you were doing and you didn't know that. So
yeah,
taste your own medicine.
Yeah. Getting like spy planes flying over. What was that?
I don't know. I didn't see anything. But yeah, I think we're realizing why we don't do honorable mentions at the start, because I'm basically ruining your list of the honorable mentions.
No, but I mean, I kind of prefer this way, actually, because we're already on topic, it's kind of nice to stay within topic.
Yeah, definitely.
Rather than dipping out and dipping back in.
So I'll do my fifth one, which kind of ties into this, which is Tempest Rising, which is a modern
Which
one.
Is my honorable mention.
Okay. Well, let's talk about it now. So Tempest Rising, for those who don't know, is there was basically a reboot of Command & Conquer in the works, right? And this reboot was then cancelled because they basically made it the EA way, which is like loads of microtransactions, loads of pay to win, and then
people, do you plan on training units?
Yeah, you must
give
pay.
Give us $5.99. It's like, yeah.
And I think, I don't know, was there like a demo came out or early access or something like this, but people got wind of it and it got cancelled anyway because of backlash from the community. And then Tempest Rising is like the unofficial Command & Conquer successor. So it's a different development team, different company. I don't know if some of the development team crosses over, but it's very much Command & Conquer in a modern skin, I would say. It's more or less identical, minus the microtransactions. But it only released this year, which I didn't know. So when we started playing it... It's only out since April. So we started playing it in June, which... Yeah. It only literally
which
just
was
came
nice,
out, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, but I didn't know that. But that's really cool because there's no unit cap. There's like the maps are really good, the units are really good, the balance is really good. There's no like
the music is really
unit.
Good.
The music
kind of
is
heavy,
class.
Yeah, heavy. Yeah,
same composer as the original games.
Really?
Yeah,
really, you must actually
that's
look
why
it up,
you
actually.
Love it so much.
So yeah, if you like Command & Conquer and you want something fresh and kind of more polished, please get Red or Rising Tempest. Yeah, I was about to say Red Rising. Red Rising's a book I'm currently listening to. So yeah, Rising Tempest, phenomenal.
Tempest really Rising. Tempest Rising.
And yeah, Garrett decided to go all out again. And when we were playing against each other, there was kind of a bridge in the middle of the map. And he decided to set up a defense, which just comprised of like a wall of rocket launchers and cannons and
lasers and all sorts.
And destroyed.
Yeah.
While I kind of got to the very end and he still couldn't figure out why I wasn't died or dead. And they had a little Jeep
running away from
like cat mouse.
But that's one of the aspects I love when you're playing with friends versus online. Because if I tried to do that online, you know, someone would just like go around the other side of the map. But we can set rules saying, okay, this bridge in the middle is the way we're going to use. I'm going to defend and you have to try and attack and get past. And it's a very fun scenario to kind of make up.
Yeah, it stops you kind of like needlessly setting up and then kind of going caught unawares. Like if you know where you're going to be attacked from, it's kind of nice. Now, I mean, look, I think it obviously it's a lot of fun the other way too. Like, so Garrett and I, we were playing, I'll hold this story because I know it's on your list. It is.
All right. We'll see.
All right. So that was Tempest Rising.
Yeah, so that was my fifth, and that was one of your honorable mentions. Then the next one for me, and I don't think you've played this, Empire Earth.
I don't think so.
I don't think you have. This is like out of the Age of Empire style games and that era. This is probably my favorite of like human civilizations at war, I would say, in terms of like realistic ones. So basically, like Empire Earth, it's very hard to describe, but it starts. It spans 500,000 years of history, right? So you start as like the Stone Age, like running around sticks and stones, battering each other. And it goes right up until the future where you're fighting in space, basically. Mad. So it's like, it's really cool. And it's basically like you have four campaigns. So you have like the Greek campaign, and this is the early human existence, basically. And then you have the English campaign, and this is kind of the medieval type campaign. So this is more kind of along the lines of Age of Empires. Then you move to the German campaign, which is the World Wars that we know. And then you have the Russian campaign, and the Russian campaign is the future one, where Russia is again a superpower and they're fighting against the US basically. So you have some missions where, like, if I remember correctly, where you have like you go back in time basically as the Russians. So you're like back in the medieval times, but you have like five robots and a tank. But you're fighting like endless units of, you know, Russians of like English medieval soldiers and stuff. So it's very interesting in that aspect. Now, it's a little bit controversial because there was a big expansion came out that cost quite a lot of money. And this expansion was you fight in space. And before this, it was just fighting on the earth, basically. And imagine you have like an aircraft carrier in World War II and you have like Spitfires coming in to bomb it, right? The fight in space is basically those animations, but the background is space and it's spaceships. So like it didn't change a lot to the gameplay. It's just like reskin. And like it works in the exact same way as planes hitting a battleship. It's like spaceships hitting a bigger spaceship, you know, and they come in and circle around the same way and drop bombs in the same way and stuff like that.
Must inquire and see if we can. Have you got it still, or we'd have to rebuy
I'd have to rebuy it. But I think there is like there's no re-release. It's not on Steam or anything like this. Could be on good old games. I don't know. But there is a fan server that you can play. I know this. I don't know how easy it is to set up. But that was one of my favorites because you can get like the walking robots and stuff at the end. And it's just, it's class. It's class. Endless replayability because you have so much timelines. And you can even play, I believe you can play a single match against someone and like literally advance from the Stone Age to the future in one game. Which is pretty rad. Yeah. That was my second one. They also, midway through development, I believe they brought in like some teenager who was like 15, 16 to rewrite the story, which was really weird because it was apparently terrible and this guy came in and rewrote it. I don't know. I can't remember what his name was, but weird kind of thing. And I think the lead from the StarCraft team worked on it. So it's like quite a polished, like well-finished game. The voice acting leaves a lot to be imagined. That's all I'll say.
And look, you're not doing it for the voice acting. You're doing it for the gameplay. Yeah.
But it does have full voice acting for every unit, which is pretty impressive for the time, you know, because I don't think Age of Empires had that. But yeah, anyway, that's one you've got to check out. But tell me, what is your third?
No, you're going to go for one now because you've called two of mine out through honorable mentions. So I'm behind. Or you're behind. So what's your next
one? All right. So we're through your... You did five and four, no?
Command and Conquer and Halo Wars 2, because they were your honorable mentions. Two has gone out of mine now.
But I did five and four now, so we're on to three.
Oh, right, okay.
I can still go first. Mine. Like, it doesn't matter, but yeah.
So, Settlers 3. So that was released in 1998.
Settlers 3, I never heard of it.
They obviously have... I'm not sure that they take a break. Like, I'm not sure if there's actually like 4, 5, and 6. I think there might be a 5, and there's a 7 definitely out, because I got the 7. Mm-hmm. But it's a little too modern. I don't like it. But Settlers 3 now is the one I kind of mentioned there at the very start. Where you can actually see, like, their animations were just so good, where you can actually see them. Like, I think, like, even when you train soldiers, they'll actually go and pick up their pikes and their swords, you know, as in their...
Cool.
That kind of thing. They just don't spawn into it. Or, like, that was the animation I distinctly remember, is when, you know, they're bringing ore to the smelter and you can see it pour out, like, liquid and then form into the block, and then he picks the block out with a bit of iron and then... extremely nice details. Now, to be fair, I don't ever recall playing that game, because I'd have been young when it was released. Mm-hmm. I don't remember playing that with people. I don't think it was actually, there was a multiplayer aspect to it. I think it was actually against the computer, against AI.
Yeah.
But it was just definitely up there as kind of one of those games, like, just a nostalgia hit, you know. And even today, like, it still holds up.
And would it be kind of similar to, like, is there anything unique about it, or would it be kind of similar to, like, Age of Empires?
Similar. It's just like it's a good fleshed out RTS game. So you have kind of base building, you have different kind of aspects. You're training different, like, types of soldiers. So you have to, like, build a thatcher. You have to build, you know, a leather worker, a tannery. You know, you have to kind of build the craft material to build. It's not like you're just like, oh, I'll make a barrack, so you can just train, you know, archers or...
Yeah, you've got to make all the components to build them, basically.
Exactly, yeah, which is kind of nice, too, because it kind of fleshes out a little bit more.
So it's kind of a little bit more fleshed out on the resource management side of things.
Yeah. Cool. You actually can't... it's not on Steam or anything. Because when I was actually looking to rebuy Settlers, obviously 7 came up, and I said, oh, sure, I'll get it. It was on sale.
Mm-hmm.
Seven kind of feels like, you know, when you kind of like download, like, they've released even Stronghold, like Crusader or Command and Conquer on mobile. And it's a very typical kind of, it's like they're using the name or the franchise to push sales. And when you go into it, then it's like, you know, like, oh, you can buy, you know, like, time savers or build savers to shave time off training units or that kind of thing. So it's kind of become a microtransaction game, which kind of killed
kind of Clash of Clans, like, reskinned kind of
thing. And it, to me, that's kind of vibe I got from Settlers 7. So I kind of haven't put a huge amount of time into it. Settlers 3, if I can actually get it again on I was about to say if I can get it on disc, but I don't even have, like, a disc drive on the PC. If I can get it a digital version somewhere, I'll get it. Or,
but you'd pick up a cheap, like, external disc drive.
Yeah, no, you could, yeah.
Yeah, plug it in via USB and then you're away.
Does it come in RGB?
you'll end up buying, like, a 500 euro one with RGB that's synced to your motherboard.
Yeah. That'd be mine. So definitely a game to worth checking out, Settlers.
Not cool. I never heard of that one. My next one you definitely haven't played. It is called Star Trek Armada 2.
No, never.
No, I knew you wouldn't. So
never even knew it on an RTS one.
No, this is such a good polished game. It's probably the best Star Trek game out there to date. It's like, you don't really have to be a fan of Star Trek, but it's basically, I think it works so well because, you know, the problem with space flight or aerial flight in these RTS games is that it's quite slow. But in Star Trek, if you watch an episode of Star Trek, the battles are quite slow, you know. They move more like battleships flying past each other, firing at each other, rather than, you know, action where they're flying all over the place like in Star Wars. So I think it lends itself very well to the format. But it basically, it was very popular, but then it got taken offline, so you can't play online anymore. And I think there is no fan option to play online or anything, so it's basically a dead game, bar this, the campaign, which is quite good.
Mm.
And there was a lot of controversy around the second one because it felt very much the same as the first one. So it was like a real polished version of the first rather than like a reinvented game, you know? And it was on the same engine and so on. But I don't know. I think it's like, do you know when you love like the first edition of something and you want them to basically change nothing but just upgrade the graphics slightly? And that's kind of what they did with a few extras. And I think it's perfect. It was released in 2001. And basically, it's interesting because you have like the Klingons and Federation and stuff, and they have the classic shipbuilding. And you can actually play as the Borg then as well, which is the bad guys. And with them, you can actually like, you can target like specific parts of a ship. So you could like disable the engines and the shields of like the Enterprise, let's say. And then you can send people to board the ship and take over the ship. And that ship is like part of your fleet then. And it even like changes to have like bits of Borg ship attached onto it and stuff. Like they've assimilated it, which is quite cool.
Class.
And you can do it also with the Federation. You can beam like an away party on board to take over the ship basically and fight it. It's very difficult to do. You have to like disable the other ship's weapons first pretty much and their shields. And then you can beam people on. Mm. And you have like a crew amount on your ship. So as you're beaming people on, it's taking your crew away. So you need something like a big Enterprise ship to do it. Because if you know, it takes more of your crew to beat their crew, basically.
Yeah.
So like
yeah.
If you have 500 crew and their ship has 700, you're never going to be able to take over the crew, basically. You know?
That's pretty cool.
So it's
cool.
Like, it's
can you,
cool.
Can you replenish your crew, or is it just that your ship now has become
You can
vulnerable
replenish your crew from like your base, which is like a star base in it.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can go back and you can replenish your crew. You can also use other ships to beam people aboard the crew that you're invading with, or you can use like multiple ships to board this one ship and so on. But you can literally, like, if you have a small ship, you can literally board all the crew onto an enemy ship, and then your ship will just be floating there until you beam people back onto it again because your crew is gone, basically. So it's got cool. a lot of like features like that which are quite cool at the time. It's very well fleshed out, I think, because it's basically only ships battling ships. So it's just in space and it's just ships. You don't have tanks and infantry and so on, you know. So that's what kind of makes it interesting. And it's all like the voice actors from the show. So if you like the show, it's pretty cool. So yeah.
That'll be pretty cool. You must check it out. Yeah, yeah. See, is
no,
it on...
you must check it out.
Yeah.
It's on Good Old Games for like £5 or something like this.
All right, yeah. We'll dip our toe in.
Yeah, yeah. It's worth it for the single player campaign alone. It's very, very good. But anyway, I digress. And tell me, what is your number two?
Now, because actually before we started this episode, I had one game down, which was actually my number two, and it's actually a turn-based game.
Mm-hmm.
So I had removed it, so I don't have a number two, so I only have a number one. So I'm going to mention the number two because it's, even though it is turn-based, there's a huge strategy element to it, which was actually Rome Total War. It's a game that kind of, I think, came out in 2004. It is on mobile, so you can actually play it like properly on your phone or on a tablet. So it's like something I still play today. It's, even though it is turn-based, it's like you can actually go in and do battles. So you can actually like survey the battlefield to actually bring your units in. So it's real time at that stage. But it's, yeah, I think for me,
I'd say that would count as a real time strategy. I think it's kind of like Warhammer Total War and so on, is it?
Yeah, but it is. It's kind of like, yeah, no, it would be, but it's,
yeah, like it's turn based until you get to the battlefield, and then it's basically
an RTS. Then
I'd say you get away with that, right?
All right, yeah, all right. So number two,
let's
mine.
Say that's number two.
Rome Total War. Now it's a game I kind of extensively kind of played. Like there was a few of my buddies growing up, like they would have been big into it. Like so you'd be playing with them.
Yeah.
But the reason why I kind of liked it was it kind of introduced this kind of like diplomacy element. So you could kind of train envoys to go and kind of barter and trade goods with other factions, and kind of no other game was kind of really doing it. Or you'd have, as you're managing your towns or your villages, you know, if you're kind of mismanaged and poorly, they'll obviously go into revolt or decisions. You can end up losing your kind of general who's in charge of that town could like slaughtered. there's other kind of factors that's going to impact your gameplay and how you your success rate. But it's a game, like, even like if you were to start up the game, you could just sit there and listen to the music. It's repetitive, but it's just like class.
10 out of 10.
But it's just, I think it's one of those games, like, I remember when I found it on mobile and I was skeptical, like, but when you downloaded it, it was just like, I think it's still like three or four gigs in size. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those things. It just works so well on touchscreen as well. But I'm not sure. I don't even know if it was actually multiplayer on
Did you play any of these in an internet cafe? Yeah, which ones?
All the games, actually. Really? Because I didn't have, I wouldn't have had really a PC that would have ran. You see, the advantage with an internet cafe, not only that, obviously, did they have better PCs, but they had libraries of these games that, you know, they're already there.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You can go in and, like, I can remember, like Command and Conquer Generals and Tiberian Sun and...
it was like an early day Game Pass, only you had to show up somewhere.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And, like, those games I would have played in an internet cafe, yeah.
Now that's where our experience differs a lot, because I would have played, like, at the start in my friend's on his PC and then eventually on my family PC, which would run, like, the basic ones like Age of Empires and stuff. You didn't need a GPU to run, so it would run then. But if you had too many units, then it would start getting choppy, basically. But because we were playing in my friend's house on one computer, it was only one player, basically. So I never played, like, against my friends. It was always just against the computer, which is kind of weird.
Think for the most part, too, definitely with, like, Rome Total War, like, multiplayer would be more RTS. Where, like, if you're kind of playing as through the campaign,
But I know what you mean. Like, the overview of the land is kind of turn-based.
Yeah.
But once you get into a battle, it's RTS. But I would say that's RTS. Like, it's more like a level selection plane, and then you get into it, you know?
Like, you set up, like, because you get kind of extra bonuses for having, like, all of Rome. So you'll have, you know, all the kind of the cities around it.
Mm-hmm.
You get an extra kind of like a bonus for it, but you can also, like, you can set cities at siege, and if they're not garrisoned, like if you don't have enough troops, they can basically, you can besiege a town to kind of weaken them, and you block their trade, and it's kind of like like other elements to it, which was quite fun.
It's funny you mentioned more like as well the politics side of things, like keeping your town, you know, happy and stuff like this, because a lot of games don't touch on it. And I was reading, like, this is very nerdy now for a sec, but I was listening to a podcast about, like, Rome's invasion of England, you know, and their occupancy of England. And because of all the barbarian tribes and stuff, it took such a military force to control England that by default, whatever general they put controlling the army there became the most powerful general in the Roman army, right? So the first time they did it, he, like, took all the troops and basically left England abandoned. And went back to march on Rome and invade and become the emperor, right? And he was stopped. And then they put someone else there. And like 40 years later, this happened again, where they put everyone on bolts and marched on Rome. And then within like 120 years, it happened three times that the person, like, ruling England put everyone in bolts and invaded Rome.
Oh, it's that time again.
It's like, I'm getting quite powerful here. But it's just hilarious that, like... They all failed, and they all knew about the previous ones that had failed, and they all did it anyway, like, which is kind of weird, you know, because it's much different having the most powerful army and then making that army mobile to invade somewhere where they already have their defenses, you know. So, like, yeah, it's interesting. But it's interesting that that game looked at that aspect, which is normally, like, completely glossed over, you know.
Yeah, like, it's, you know, it's just such, like, it's got such nice kind of polish to it, and you're kind of trying to focus on, like, growth and... Yeah, it's just fun. Like, you can obviously, like, you can become allies or declare war with other factions. So you can kind of, like, build a posse and kind of use it to your advantage, which is kind of nice.
But can you, when you join up, can you actually control the units? So, like, if you make an alliance with someone, can you control their units, or they just fight alongside you?
They can fight alongside you. Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm just thinking of one game. There was another Star Trek game, which wasn't like a strategy game, but it was Birth of the Federation. And it was like turn-based with the big map of the galaxy, but then it would go into like a, a set battle if you encountered another galaxy, basically. Kind of like Risk, you know, you move from like place to place and then you battle once you get there. And with that, you could make the others ally up with you. And once you allied up with them, you would take control of all their worlds and their army and everything. But it was like fucking impossible to do. We never did it. It's like one of the most difficult games out there. But yeah. But I'm going to mention one of my honorable mentions because it's kind of linked to what we're talking about. This is my last honorable mention. And that is Frostpunk.
I really like it. I've played quite a bit of the first one. There is a second one, isn't there?
There is, but it's a very different game. It's not like Frostpunk. It's not Frostpunk 2.0. It's literally completely changed.
Yeah. So like Frostpunk, let me think. Now that is so kind of like steampunky, isn't it? So you have your big reactor in the middle of...
I give you the quick blurb. So basically, end of the world, like Ice Age appears, and you're basically traveling north or something. I don't know why you're going north. Traveling north, and you have this generator on tracks, and then you park up this generator somewhere, and this is basically this big furnace thing. And this is at the center of your town, and this basically heats it, and you need to like upgrade it and make it expand. And there's no enemies in the game. There's nothing external going on. It's just trying to survive.
You're just fighting the weather. Yeah.
And you have to like pass certain laws. Like, do we enable the Child Labor Act where kids have to work to improve productivity? Like, do we build schools? Do we like petition a graveyard? And everything costs like resources to do. So people come to you with requests that like, we need a graveyard. The bodies are piling up. And then if you sign that, you then don't have the resources to like send the children to school as the next request, you know? So you can't keep everyone happy, and you're basically just trying to keep the town hopeful the whole time and stop them from becoming dismayed and like giving up.
And you have to have enough resources kind of banked to counteract. So you get like kind of like a real coal period.
Yes.
So you have to put the reactor on like, you know, so the reactor is on different kind of stages.
Different levels, basically.
Yeah, costs X amount, and then stage two, double the amount of resources in stage three. So you have to keep it on stage three for a period. So you have to make sure you have enough resources banked. Yeah.
It's incredibly unforgiving. It's just you don't win. You just do a little less bad each time you play it.
That's it.
That's it. The first time you play, you're like, what is this chaos? And you just dead pretty much instantly. And it's almost like things like your resource gathering can't go quick enough. And then everyone is giving up work. And when everyone gives up work in the evening, all production of everything stops. So if you're doing upgrades or anything, it completely stops. But your furnace is still burning resources all night. And then you fast forward through the night, basically. And it's like you can't get enough time to get resources together before you run out, basically. And there's no difficulty settings. So you're just in the game and that's it. But Frostpunk 2 kind of takes it a step further, and you're not in this town anymore. You're on like this global map. And you're managing like different cities and their expansion kind of. And I think it's very different from the original. It's not like the same kind of mechanics, I think. But yeah, that's my my little honorable mention.
It's a good game. It looks really cool. Like, I like the elements for it. But the thing is, well, I remember like you have to kind of strategically place, you know, you want your townspeople to be closer to the reactor because they're gaining more heat and you can kind of position. But if you've built it, I can't remember, can you demolish stuff? But
you can demolish stuff, but you don't get the resources back, I think.
Yeah, there's something anyway, yeah. So yeah, it's a tough... And you have to put people out for expeditions then, or risk sending people out and they mightn't come back, or they come back with... They cost resources to send and they might come back with nothing, or they mightn't come back at all. Yeah,
it's a gamble. And then it's how many do you send? Because if you send more, it's more chance of success, but then you have less people gathering food or hunting or... You know, it's a nightmare. You just can't, like, in your normal strategy game, you can be like, okay, I have 5 people collecting gold, 5 people collecting wood, 5 people collecting stone, and, you know, 5 collecting meat, and now I'll just increase all of them by 1. My resources are piling up. In Frostpunk, it's just complete chaos. You just cannot get enough of anything, basically. So, that's my honorable mention. Should I jump into my number 2?
Go for it, Jack, because I'm on to number 1 then after.
All right. So my number 2 is Alien versus Predator Extinction.
Have you ever heard of this? No.
I think you've probably seen it and you've thought that it was Alien versus Predator, which came out on the PS2 also, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, 360 maybe. PS3 and 360, but this is basically an old RTS game, which was offline only. There was never any online play. It was only on the PS2, so the only way you can play it now is pick up a copy or emulate it, basically. But this was really interesting because, like the one, so there's an Alien versus Predator game where you have three campaigns and it's first person and you can play as the Predator, the aliens, and the Marines. And each campaign is very, very different. It's the exact same in this. So you can play as all three factions. And like the humans are like your typical, they gather resources, they produce units, quite simple to play, but the enemy is quite interesting. So with the Predators, you have to basically kill people and gather their skulls. And then these skulls get you honor points. And then these honor points can be used to request like new units from the mothership, basically. So you have no base. You just have like a few Predators.
And skulls and spines.
And they basically just start landing new Predators then. And I think there's like a couple of different types. And you can request different types depending on what hero points you have. And that works very different, obviously, from the humans. And then, because if you lose one, it's gone, basically. You can't just like build another one and gather more resources. And with the aliens then, you have to do like, as you would imagine, you have to get a queen, you have to lay an egg, you have to hatch a facehugger, you have to grab a human with the facehugger, you have to let the chestburster come out, and you have to then bring the chestburster back to your base to let it grow into a unit. And what it turns into depends on what unit you got. So like if you can get a bigger unit, you'll get a better unit out of it, you know?
But there's
a risk through the whole process that you can be shot. Because as soon as the facehugger goes for the human, they start trying to kill the human. So it's like you have to have like almost either like a stealthy approach, or you have to have units to distract from what you're trying to do with the facehuggers, basically.
That's pretty cool.
You can even send like a xenomorph out, one of the aliens, to kill people and then drag their bodies back like one by one to the where the facehuggers are so they can do the thing in peace then, basically. So it's really, really cool.
That's a really class element. I'd love to, that would be a good one to play, actually.
No, it's a very unique one. That like you should emulate this and just play it and just experience the campaign, because it's really, really different. Like you just start with an alien, and then you have to go and you have to try and like isolate one unit to kill him, to bring him back to base, to then
probably the toughest faction to play. So
it's also very powerful. So like each alien takes a lot to take down. It's not just like one unit versus one unit. So I would say it's very balanced. And then obviously when you're the humans, you're not just like gathering resources. You're also trying to stop the facehuggers from getting your people and trying to keep everyone in groups and trying to also like not be isolated to the predators and stuff, and trying to keep them away from your skulls so they don't get more units and so on. So
it kinda, get away from my skull.
Yeah, it all kind of plays in, but it's got three separate campaigns where you play as each one. So like the replayability is like through the roof, basically. And it's similar to Halo Wars that it's designed for console.
So, and even though this isn't, did you ever play there was an Alien versus Predator game came out, not the new one, no, but there was one before. Again, it wasn't an RTS, but it was just like a first person.
Yeah, this is the one I was talking about, the first person one. And the 360, isn't it?
You're talking about the first person. It's not an RTS.
I'm talking about the extension game, the RTS. But there was one that came out, which was this first person one. This was just Alien versus Predator without the extension subtitle.
I remember playing that religiously. You play as the alien, and you can actually go into like vents and.
But what's interesting about that is you play as like the alien and you play as the predator, and they're very different, obviously, because the alien you can like run up the walls and stuff like this. And when you play as the humans, it feels like you're playing a horror game all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're just there with the torch and the pistol and you're like, oh shit. They're two different games, but you've probably seen this one and thought it was the other one at some point. As in like the case maybe. Or something like this.
But then I suppose like if it's only out on PlayStation, it probably wouldn't have come across my radar, because I'd probably be like, oh yeah, sure, that's on PlayStation, sure, one.
Yeah, true.
Wouldn't get to play it.
But I can't believe you didn't come across it at some point though, or like watch a Let's Play or something.
No, I'm going to be watching it now after.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to see what it looks like.
Absolutely class. But tell me, what was your number one?
My number one is and always will be Stronghold, and mainly because I love the medieval period. So in Stronghold, it was released in 2001. And again, it's sentimental because it was kind of, it's a game I used to play with my father. When I first started playing it, we had actually a laptop, and when I used to go up to my grandparents, they'd have like a study, and I used to set up in there and he'd just be playing it. But like, it was always, there is multiplayer, so Garrett and I have it, and we try to play it on multiplayer. Matchmaking doesn't work. You have to use a third party app called Game Ranger to kind of spawn a client that you can both join to. We're too stupid to figure it out. Even though actually, because it was the day after, I think we tried and failed, I managed to get into a game then. So we might try it again actually and see if we can dip into it.
I definitely like to play it. It does look interesting. It looks very different to what I'm used to.
I love it because like it's, again, when you're kind of talking with settlers being quite diverse, it's the same kind of format. So in Stronghold, you're a liege, or you're like a king. Or, well, you're a crusader. So there is obviously a campaign to it. You can barter in faction or join people. There is diplomacy there in it. You have obviously different units. You have trebuchets and catapults and ballistas that you can kind of develop, and you can take out kind of, you know, hauling boulders across and destroying enemy kind of fortifications. You can get cows and launch dead cows.
Bit of earthworm juice.
Yeah, exactly. So you could launch kind of festering cows into, you know, to spread disease so that their peasants, you know.
Are you serious? You can actually launch the cows? You can't. You can put the cow on a catapult and launch it. I thought you were joking.
And you can kind of put in like literally skulls on pikes on your fortifications, and you can, you know, put in, you know, those hanging cages.
Yes.
And you can imprison people into them, and you can kind of
heroics
these huge, elaborate kind of castles, and even though you don't need to get resources, you'll still build in heaps of farms and rock to see your stockpile kind of grow. But that's what I liked about it. It's like, so when you set up moats and drawbridges, you can set up the fire brazers, so you can kind of have flaming arrows, and you can have pitch, so you can kind of put pitch down around the end of your wall, so when you set a flaming arrow to it, it'll burn any units trying to scale your walls. Like, it's got a lot in it, like, so yeah, it's a game kind of, I suppose, always in my head and always in my heart, so I love it, and that's why I was so keen to try and get you to play it.
So it's very much focused around the keeper, the castle.
Yeah, so like you're building, again, it's just like a typical RTS, so you're kind of, you have different factions, you have campaigns to go through, so the campaign is that you're fighting your way across the map, and you know, you'll see like a little dotted kind of path, and your next target is, we'll call it the, I don't know, I can't remember what the name of the character is in it, but you can also play as these if you're playing against multiplayer, or you can pick them. They kind of come with little bits of perks, you know, but it's nothing game breaking. But they're quite hard. The campaign I found very difficult. I don't think I ever won the campaign. I might have got the second or third.
You do have, though, in a lot of these games, like a lot of these RTS games, not just in the campaign, but when you play against the computer basically cheats. Like, it doesn't have to follow the rules of the games. Like, this is the case in, like, what's one, for example, in, like, Command & Conquer. Notoriously in that, the enemy would cheat. So, like, you would start and it would be building stuff before it could possibly have gotten to that age or progression or gathered enough resources. So it would just cheat and have the whatever it needed.
A lot of these things, like, you'd be chuffed to get, like, one perimeter wall built around your castle. And next thing because the map is already revealed, so you can just go over and look at how they're going. And next thing, they've, like, four layers of wall built up, which is, like, 7 meters thick. And you're like, how? Like, but no, it's definitely worth a shout. And now I actually have a couple of Stronghold games. So there's the new one, which was Shogun. I think I got it for you. Mm-hmm. So I'd say matchmaking would probably work seamlessly in that, because it was only
Warlords was the one we got, I think.
Warlords, yeah.
Warlords, yeah, so, yeah, which is the kind of new world.
Yeah, so hopefully that'll matchmaking will work.
Man, just
so, yeah.
Talking about all these now, I really want to play Stronghold and like Tempest Rising, and because I have them open on Steam here, I'm just looking at them. And I'm just like, God, they're such good games.
They're a good bit of fun too, you know. They're a game you can kind of dip in, and like, I suppose, look, they can obviously take, do you know what I mean? You can drag it out as long as you want, but...
Yeah, yeah. I think the scalability of them as well, that like, you know, a lot of games we play, like if you take Lethal Company or, you know, Ready or Not or whatever, you can have like 2 people, 3 people or 4 people, and then that's it. And in these games, you know, you can have up to 8 people, up to 12 sometimes. And you can also have like, oh, the 3 of us against like 5 of the computer on medium, or against, you know, 2 of the computer on very hard, or, you know, 1 of us against 2 of us if the other 2 were worse. You know, that kind of thing. Hint, hint. which brings me to my next one, my number one.
Which is
Age of Mythology. How could it not be? So, like, this is the one I remember playing the most. And it was very tough between this and the Alien vs. Predator. No, Alien vs. Predator. It was very close between the two, but I went with Age of Mythology just because I would have played it way more, and I played it like up to modern times because it had the extended edition, then it had the remaster, the gold edition, and so on. And it has all the expansions. So the current one is the retold edition, which is like the modern everything. And the reason I liked it so much, I think, was when this came out back in like 2002, there was a couple of things, like the Star Trek Armada was out, which was quite different, and yeah, the Alien versus Predator one was also out around the same time, I think. That was, let me just check. That was, yeah, 2001 as well. So they would have all been out around the same time. But in terms of the PC ones and that Age of Empire style, I think Age of Mythology went to like the next level, because they had one, the god powers, which you had like special abilities from the gods. And they had like the mythology aspect, which was just super interesting. Like you had, you know, like dragons and cyclopses and so on. So you had like the 4 races. There was like the Norse mythology, and then you had 3 gods of the Norse, like Loki and so on, and Thor. And then you had the Greek mythology, which was Zeus and so on. And then you had the Atlantean mythology, which was mythology in itself, because it was Atlantean, which was very cool. And then you had also the 4th one, which... I don't actually remember what the 4th one was. Maybe there was only 3. I'll look it up in a minute. But there was an extra one which I never played, which was the Chinese mythology, because this was an expansion pack that I didn't have. And supposedly that was very good and had its own campaign, but I never played it. But what I do like about it is the story, because it starts off like in the Greek times, and you're like the Greek soldier. I can't remember the name now. And Adonis or whatever it is. And you have to, like, you start off with like a few troops, and you've heard that there's the legend of this Cyclops up in the mountains, and you have to go and hunt him. And you literally like take these troops up to like a mountain and go into like the back of a cave, and you find like a Cyclops in there. And it's very like these Witcher style quests within like an RTS game, which is quite cool. So yeah, I think Age of Mythology, like, I've talked about enough on this podcast. But
with your eyes hanging out of your head.
I think everyone knows about this, but yeah, that was my number one. So yeah,
and that's what the story I was about to say earlier, and I said no, I'll leave it off, and because I know this was going to be on your list. Now, obviously, unsurprisingly, it's your number one. No, but yeah. Garrett and I decided to. Well, Garrett convinced me to play some Age of Mythology. Now, obviously, I got absolutely trounced. I think it was like 2/3 into our first or second game until you decided to tell me that you had to individually level up your buildings.
Yeah, Ask Jamie on it, which was this was after you had done this 2 or 3 times in the previous game. So I was like, no, I'll give this fucker a taste of his own medicine now. And you were like, how do you do this? And I was like, oh yeah, I think you have to upgrade this or something.
Yeah, or sure, like the same thing. Like Garrett and I, so we were playing, we got a buddy of ours on there, and it was a 2v1, and we still got absolutely destroyed. Yeah,
that was a
even though I tried to be sneaky and get in behind.
Yeah, there was one point where you said, I said that I would just attack you and you had to defend because I thought that was the easier thing for you to do. And then you sent all your troops to the side and you ran around the back of my base and tried to invade, and then you still got fucking trounced.
Well, I was making good progress.
You were. Until I pulled everyone back and then I was like, oh, up on that. But no, I had good fun. But that's what I love about these, that you can set those scenarios, you know, like you didn't really know how to play. So I was like, all right, the two E versus me. And probably if we did it now, it would be a lot more fair because that was like both of your first games, you know?
No, so I'd like, still forget. Probably,
you know. But yeah, that kind of wraps it up. What's our next episode, Jim? Do we even know yet? Will it be Tomb Raider?
It should be Tomb Raider, yeah.
It should be Tomb Raider.
I'll finish out Tomb Raider this week.
All right.
We'll have another natural vote.
I got my emulation working on my Steam Deck as well, so I'll be playing a few classic stuff. I got a few to finish off, such as Ape Escape and X-Men Clone Wars.
I must dip into Ape Escape. Clone Wars, yes. I had never really played, actually.
Clone Wars, that might be worth a shot.
Very good. Yeah.
If you liked Earthworm Jim, it's kind of down the same route. It's a very well-fleshed-out superhero game.
Earthworm Jim still surprises me when I think about it, just animation-wise.
This will surprise you because it's literally like you have five options to pick five different like mutants, and each one has completely different like play styles and abilities. So it's not just a reskin and they fire something else. Like you have like certain levels are impossible with the wrong mutant, basically. It's class. We'll talk about it. That'd be a nice one to bang out as well. I'd say it's only a couple of hours.
Yeah. All right, cool. So should we leave it there?
We'll leave it there, sure. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening. Goodbye.